The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad tapas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. I'm going to be talking about tolerance today, training with tolerance, training to be tolerant. But first I'm going to talk a bit about the ceremony that we just did and explain a little bit about what it means to be a Buddhist martyr. And in 1991, Reverend Master Jiyu heard that a mass grave was discovered in Mongolia. It contained the remains of around 30,000 people who had been killed by orders from Stalin in the 1930s. I've read differing accounts. However, it is believed that 18,000 were Buddhist monks, nuns, and lay practitioners. The others were members of the Communist Party in Mongolia, the wealthy, the intellectuals, and members of other religions. And I remember when we were seeing a movie about Stalin, that one of his comments was, well, if there's a problem with someone, just get rid of them. So this was an extreme example of intolerance. Also, by orders from Stalin, 700 Buddhist monasteries were destroyed, leaving only one remaining. In 2003, another mass grave was found from the same period, containing mostly monks and nuns. During this purge, pretty much all the monks and nuns in Mongolia were killed, leaving only some young boys who were returned to their parents. So this is why Reverend Master Jiyu wanted to have this ceremony, and that's when we started doing this ceremony. I looked up the word martyr in Wikipedia, and it said a martyr is somebody who suffers persecution and death for advocating, renouncing, refusing to renounce, and or refusing to advocate a belief or cause, usually a religious one. Most martyrs are considered holy or are respected by their followers, becoming a symbol of good leadership and heroism. And I believe it was people who became martyrs felt like they were fulfilling the word of God, and it was a noble thing to do. And Buddhists see things quite differently, and martyrdom is not sought after. Life is sacred, and what is important is to do whatever you can to preserve the Dharma and pass it on, and that generally means to live. And in fact, in Mongolia, before the Great Purge took place, the head of Mongolian Buddhists warned Buddhists and urged them to flee. But it was difficult for them to escape, and most monks and nuns were killed. One nun who held the lineage of her master returned to lay life, married another practitioner, and they both hid as lay people, continuing to practice Buddhism in secret in order to preserve the teachings of her master. So that's just a little bit about the ceremony, why we do it. And when we started it. So I think I picked the topic tolerance. I asked a few monks if they had any suggestions for me, and one person right away said tolerance. And I think because to see tolerance is a beautiful thing to see. And also because I would like to become a more tolerant person myself. And I found it very interesting that over this time period when I've been preparing this talk, I have become completely intolerant of myself. And I think one of the things was that in reading about tolerance, I then had this ideal of what tolerance was, and I was not living up to that ideal. So I was intolerant of myself because I was not tolerant enough. So this is something to think about. One of the things we have to learn is to be tolerant of ourselves. And there's something very nice in Roar the Tigress, Volume 1, which Reverend Master Jiyu wrote, a little snippet on tolerance. But she's talking about that Buddhism is a religion. And she's talking about what other religions call God. The terms we use for it don't really matter. They're just labels, just concepts. Don't waste time thinking about what God is like. Whatever you imagine that it is, I assure you it is not what you'll... How can I say this? I was going to say it is not what you'll know when you get self out of the way. That's not strictly true. What it comes down to is this. We always place upon ourselves our own personal concept of God or the eternal, something that is much better than us. But we usually stop short at something that just is there. And is such perfect love, it can tolerate everybody in the world. I don't know if you ever saw that really great old comedy, The Night That They Raided Minsky's. There was a lovely line in there where the old Jewish vaudevillian is speaking to the dour Amish father of one of his girls, and they both decide to pray together because, as one of them points out, only a God that could tolerate me could possibly tolerate you. So, now you have to keep this in mind. How can you imagine something that doesn't just love? It is unquestioning love. It makes the rain of compassion to fall on the evil and the good. What is evil? What is good? They are concepts in our minds. It is all right for us to have these concepts as long as we don't try to put them on the eternal. This is what she was calling that which is in those days. You cannot be judgmental. The most important thing for a Buddhist is not to judge other people. In other words, love God, do your own training. Love the cosmic Buddha, do your own training. Love Allah, do your own training. Don't worry about other people. So, in reading about tolerance and thinking about tolerance and preparing this talk on tolerance, now I forgot what I was going to say. So I have to learn to be tolerant of myself and accept that I am doing the best I can and that all of you are doing the best you can as well. We often think of of tolerance in terms of religious tolerance. And Buddhism, as you know, has always advocated religious tolerance, and the Buddha has always taught tolerance of other religions and of all beings. He was tolerant of everyone who came to see him. And he also taught tolerance on all levels, all acceptance, loving kindness or metta towards all beings, and patience with anger, which I'm going to talk about. I found this book in our library called No Time to Lose, which is Pema Chodron's teaching on the way of the Bodhisattva by Shantideva. And there's some really good teaching in there about patience helping us with our anger. So I'm going to be talking about that as well. And anger is the opposite of tolerance. So anger in all its forms need to be let go of. I looked on the internet for information on tolerance, and one definition of tolerance is the ability or willingness to tolerate something, in particular the existence of opinions or behavior that one does not necessarily agree with. Sympathy or indulgence for beliefs or practice differing from or conflicting with one's own. So that is one definition of tolerance. The other definition is to bear something painful or unpleasant. And they both go together in our training. I also found an article called The Art of Disagreement by Ratnagosa. From a Buddhist perspective, tolerance is extremely important, and it has been a hallmark of Buddhism down the 25 centuries of its history. Tolerance is the acceptance that other people hold different views from ourselves. Tolerance is the willingness to allow others to be different in their views and actions. Above all, tolerance is the absolute avoidance of using power, violence, or coercion to force other people to think and believe as we do. Tolerance is an attitude of loving kindness, metta, towards those who hold views which are different from ours, and even towards those who hold views which are repugnant to us. Intolerance, on the other hand, is the willingness to use and the use of force, violence, and coercion to make other people behave as we want them to and hold the views we want them to hold. There is also the intolerance that doesn't want to force others to change but simply wants to exterminate or exile them for being different. In our world today, there are many examples of people being tolerant, and there are also many examples of intolerance. Whenever you look at the news, you can see examples of intolerance. Tolerance is a beautiful thing and touches our hearts. And I found for myself, it was very difficult to see. I love tolerance. I mean, it's wonderful. But in preparing this talk, I saw in how many different ways I actually was intolerant. And I'm going to talk about these because I think it helps us to look at how we can be intolerant and how we can change and turn our hearts around in this way. And I read an article some time back about someone, and it's called From Hate to Love. And it's an ex-neo-Nazi's journey to Buddhism. And it's about someone who, for many different reasons, got into white supremacy. And he became a leader in this, forming became the founder of the Northern Hammerskins, a regional branch of the largest racist skinhead organization in the world, Hammerskin Nation. He was the lead singer of Centurion, a white power metal band that sold over 20,000 CDs. His whole identity was centered around the color of his skin and his race. He radiated hatred, and he became more and more hateful and encouraged others to hate. And this was his whole thing, hating and violence and harming other people. And then one day, it says here, I practiced violence until it was natural. And the violence became who I was, he reflects. I needed it like fuel, and I would beat other human beings to the point of hospitalization to get the hit of adrenaline. Yet amid the chaos and bloodshed, something within Michaelis was glimpsing something that didn't fit his violent narrative, the kindness and compassion of people he considered enemies. Somehow, the elderly black female cashier at McDonald's could see the potential for good in the tattoo-covered neo-Nazi standing in front of her. Spotting the swastika tattoo on McAllis's middle finger, she looked at him and said, I know you're a better person than that. That's not who you are. Michaelis ran out of there and never went back. The purpose of that tattoo was to flip my middle finger with a swastika at people so they'd be frozen like a deer in the headlights, he says. But when she met my hate with such compassion, I couldn't fight back. This was one of the many instances in which Michaelis's Jewish boss, lesbian supervisor, or black and Latino co-workers treated him with kindness and compassion when he least deserved it, even offering him sandwiches after he spoke with hate. His parents never gave up on him, even though Michaelis says he put them through hell. Maintaining his hate in the face of so many who refused to lower themselves to his level began to exhaust him. But I didn't have the courage to answer that inner voice asking why I was doing this, he remembers. Even alcohol couldn't distance me from the fact that I was beginning to be disgusted by my own behavior. While none of these incidents changed Michaelis on the spot, he says they all planted seeds that highlighted how wrong his thinking was. But it was actually when he had a child and he didn't that it turned his heart around. The final realization came when he saw his daughter playing with children of different races at daycare. It struck me that they were all children, not black children or white children, but the sons and daughters of mothers and fathers, he writes in his memoir, My Life After Hate. I thought of all the people I had hurt, whether with my own hands or lighting some psychopath's fuse. How did their loved ones feel when they saw this person who was so special to them battered and broken? How horrible would it be to have my daughter exposed to such violence in the slightest aspect? Love for my child thawed a dormant empathy for people that I was never aware of. So this man changed completely. In fact, he went about helping others to turn their hearts around as well. So our tolerance of beings really, really helps the world. And in thinking about this class, in thinking about this talk, a few things came to mind. One was holding to fixed views, reacting instead of responding, holding on to the self. Intolerance is the source, as I think we can all see, the source of much suffering in this world, and can be the result of ignorance and fear. So I'll tell you the ways that I saw that I was intolerant. And perhaps when you're preparing a talk, you see things more clearly because you're so focused on it. But I'll start with holding to fixed views. I think it's the way that we think we should be, the way we think the world should be. How we think life should be. When people don't behave as we think they should, and circumstances aren't as we think they should be, then we can be intolerant of what is. I've had this fixed idea that when I meditate, it should be quiet. I must apologize. Things aren't coming out as I hoped they would. I don't like to just read what I've written, but for some reason, I'm going to have to accept this and tolerate myself and read it. So I hope you will be tolerant of me during this talk, and I hope that there will be things of value that will be said, because I certainly would like to do that. So I have this fixed view that things should be quiet, and I also have this fixed view that things shouldn't be cold, that I like to be warm enough, and I like things to be quiet. So I've noticed that when it's noisy, the mind goes goes into this whole thing of, well, it must be quiet, so I can't meditate, or it's too cold, I can't meditate. However, if I just let go of that thought, then I'm able to meditate, and I'm able to just be with what is coming up as a result of the noise or being cold. So we all have these ideas of how things should be, and fixed views, shoulds and can'ts, musts, keep the mind hard and intolerant. But when we open our hands and allow things to be as they are, we can let go of suffering. And you can ask yourself, why do things have to be this way? Why do people have to be this way? During one of our monastic retreats, I found myself letting go of some of these shoulds and not saying something when I normally would have, like, why were the windows open so wide? And I felt at peace for letting go of how I thought things should be. And I have to say it was a great joy because our true nature is tolerant. It's tolerant of the way people are, the way things are. But often at other times I hold on so tight to these very things that I was able to let go of, even though I saw that that it brought me joy to let go. When someone says something we don't agree with or suggests a way of doing something that we don't like, how quick do we react? How tightly do we hold on to our fixed views? Are we able to just listen to what is being said and respond from a place of stillness? We still may not agree, but we will be listening, giving the other person a chance and showing respect for him or her. Anger, hard-heartedness, ill will blind us to our true nature, to the tender heart of true compassion, the tolerance and acceptance of all beings and all that is within us. And Shantideva, in The Way of the Bodhisattva, talks about how patience is the antidote to anger. Now, we are all training, and we are all working on ourselves and learning to be tolerant of other beings, and we are all doing the best we can, and yet we can do better. And that's what I'm hoping I'll get across today. Shantideva says there's three kinds of patience. The patience that comes from reframing the vicissitudes of the spiritual path. And he says, Shantideva will now present a positive outlook on suffering. Suffering also has its worth. Through sorrow, pride is driven out, and pity felt for those who wander in samsara. Evil is avoided, goodness seems delightful. Shantideva cites three benefits of pain. First, it is valuable because through sorrow, pride is driven out. No matter how arrogant and condescending we've been, great suffering can humble us. The pain of serious illness or loss of a loved one can be transformative, softening us and making us less self-centered. The second benefit of pain is empathy, the compassion felt for those who wander in samsara. Our personal suffering brings compassion for others in the same situation. A young woman was telling me that when her baby died, she felt a deep connection to all the other parents who had lost children. This was, as she put it, the unexpected blessing of her sorrow. With sadness, we realize that we're all in the same predicament. We're all caught by the klesas and continually blocking our basic goodness. Here Shantideva expresses compassion for everybody wandering in samsara, especially those with no interest in finding freedom. The third value of suffering is that evil is avoided and goodness seems delightful. When we practice according to Shantideva's instructions, we can get smarter about cause and result. Based on this understanding, we'll have less inclination to cause harm and more desire to gather virtue and benefit others. This is the eager faith I talked about before. We're eager to live our lives in ways that dismantle the habits that cause us so much grief. We are eager to increase our compassion, wisdom, and happiness. These are the three values of suffering. It humbles us, it causes us to feel compassion for others in the same situation, and because we begin to understand the workings of karma, it motivates us to not add to our burden of pain when we could lighten the load. So this is the patience that comes from reframing how we regard the vicissitudes of the spiritual path. So this is a different way of looking at suffering. The second kind of patience is the patience that comes from seeing the complex reality of any situation, and three, the patience that comes from developing tolerance. And I'd like to end this talk by reading a section from this book called Step by Step, by Mahagosananda, who was the patriarch of Cambodian Buddhism. And this is called Self-Determination. The suffering of Cambodia is but a mirror of the suffering of the world. The Buddha tells us that enlightenment begins when we realize that life is suffering. This may seem negative or pessimistic to many people, but it is not. It is only a statement of our shared circumstance, to be seen without regret or attachment. Mahatma Gandhi said that our suffering is a path to self-purification. He said, when the satyagraha practices ahimsa and suffers voluntarily, the love that develops within has a tremendous power. It affects and elevates everyone around, including the opponent. Gandhi called this the law of suffering. The Buddha also taught that suffering teaches us compassion. Whenever I think about the suffering of the Cambodian people, I am filled with compassion. The Buddha said you must work out your own salvation with diligence. What does it mean? Each of us is responsible for our own salvation. This is self-determination in its purest, most essential form. All understanding of liberation, personal or national, must begin with this point. Sorry, I read the wrong. I knew this wasn't right. I was reading the wrong article. I had this on backwards. Who is the enemy? Sorry. In 1981, the United Nations held a conference to discuss the future of Cambodia. During that time, we held a Buddhist ceremony for peace. At the end of the ceremony, a Khmer Rouge leader came up to me very cautiously and asked if I would come to Thailand to build a temple at the border. I said that I would. Oh, thought many people, he is talking to the enemy. He is helping the enemy. How can he do that? I reminded them that love embraces all beings, whether they are noble-minded or low-minded, good or evil. Both the noble and the good are embraced because loving-kindness flows to them spontaneously. The unwholesome-minded must be included because they are the ones who need loving-kindness the most. In many of them, the seed of goodness may have died because warmth was lacking for its growth. It perished from coldness in a world without compassion. Gandhi said that he was always ready to compromise. He said, "Behind my non-cooperation, there was always the keenest desire to cooperate. On the slightest pretext, even with the worst of opponents. To me, a very imperfect mortal is ever in need of God's grace, ever in need of the Dharma. No one is beyond redemption. I do not question that loving one's oppressors, Cambodians loving the Khmer Rouge, may be the most difficult attitude to achieve, but it is a law of the universe that retaliation, hatred, and revenge only continue the cycle and never stop it. Reconciliation does not mean that we surrender rights and conditions, but rather that we use love in all of our negotiations. It means that we see ourselves in the opponent. For what is the opponent but a being in ignorance? And we ourselves are also ignorant of many things. Therefore, only loving kindness and right mindfulness can free us." Gandhi said, "The more you develop ahimsa in your being, the more infection it becomes until it overwhelms your surroundings, and by it might oversweep this world. We are each individually responsible for our own salvation and our own happiness. Through our service, we find a road to salvation. This service is nothing but our love for all beings and the uplifting of ignorance into light." So, I thank you for your patience and for your kindness and your tolerance. And I don't know why I suddenly was not able to talk, but I guess that happens sometimes.